And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway wall. Hi. This is Shuffling Notes. This is a channel where we just love talking about music because we love music. And this episode, I would like to, well, firstly tell you I am your co-host, Razi.
And I'm your co-host, Prankit.
And I would then start the episode with a quote by Don McLean. Even though, well, let's get him. So his quote says, my expectations for myself were never high. I had a very unusual way of writing songs and of thinking about music. I wasn't at all like Bob Dylan or Simon and Garfunkel. I was completely different. I didn't have a David Geffen at my side. Just taking away what Don McLean gave us in word is Simon and Garfunkel is something that stood out for him, and Simon and Garfunkel is something that stood out for us. So this week we will dive into Simon and Garfunkel's debut album, called Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. And yeah, so this was released in 1964, and it's just to put it in the fewest words possible, I can say that it's such a perfect kind of way to express times of war. Right. And it just, because every song has a very unique zone to it. But before we get into that, let's just, you know, get into a little bit of history. So this perfect duo, as I would say, was a Jewish duo. They first went by the name Tom and Jerry. Did you know that?
Yeah, their stage names.
And that's nostalgic for us 90s kids. And you know, it's just funny, yeah, to actually picture all the songs that we've heard of Simon and Garfunkel to come from someone named Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Being Tom and Jerry, the famous Tom and Jerry. And yeah, so this album, it was very much influenced by Bob Dylan's poetry and acoustics, etc. Like Bob Dylan's music, let's say. And yeah, it's you know, just like a first impression. It's, well, at the time in 1964, the first impressions of the album were so bad that they broke the duo up.
Well, it just didn't take off, I think. You know, they released it, I think they were expecting it to be a bigger hit. But then
it got really bad reviews because Bob Dylan was already in everyone's head, singing his ways, his word, his way. And this adding on to it, I mean, it's very unique, but yeah, that was realized, I think, a year later in the re-release of the album with Sounds of Silence, yeah, being the Sound, I mean, of Silence that, yeah, we know of.
Yeah, I mean, there was also, you know, the time at which this album came out, you know, there was the, what you call the British invasion of music. So a lot of these British bands like Pink Floyd and, you know, The Who, like we talk about, and, you know, Rolling Stones, all of these big bands, they were really sort of making an impact on sort of American music. And I think somewhere they're sort of, even though they have a unique sound, it kind of got lost because there wasn't a lot of attention to this type of like folk rock music, you know. A lot of the attention was going more towards hard rock and roll in that area. So I think like the timing and everything, you know, it didn't really align as well as they thought it would.
Yeah, and I guess it was just, I mean, people didn't realize the value of the words until, you know, because I guess nobody really went deep into the music because it was just acoustics and everyone had been hearing a lot of acoustics at the time. And this being just an addition, and maybe like there are such nuances that can be taken out from the music itself, which, you know, connected to the purest form of folk rock. And so there's one word that I learned from this. It's Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist. I think it's Zeitgeist is so, how it's pronounced.
I mean, I've just written it down, so I remember it. But so it just means, it's German philosophy. So it means spirit of the age.
Yeah, sort of embedded in the memory of that era, you know. Zeitgeist, that's how it's pronounced. Yeah, Zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
thank you.
It's embedded in the zeitgeist, is like how you say, right?
So, yeah, and I completely agree with that being a review of Simon and Garfunkel, like the early age Simon and Garfunkel coming in, and you know those few people who realized it at the time. When I think a year later, the producer, his name it was Tom Wilson. He, you know, he just went through Sound of Silence again and he
redubbed it with like,
electric and drums and the one I think most of us sort of got introduced
the version of Sound of Silence that is the one that most people have heard is the redubbed version. It was, you know, interesting. I think what because what happened was the original Sound of Silence, it did start picking up radio play, and I think that's when the producer realized there's an opportunity there to make this more mainstream, a bit more of a radio song, and then he just went in and sort of redubbed it and released it, and that was a big hit. And unbeknownst to, you know, Simon and Garfunkel didn't know that the producer is actually doing that, but it seems to have worked out.
And so yeah, they got back together right after you know,
they record the second album,
the number one throughout I think US and UK charts.
Did quite well.
Yeah, I mean, they I've written something down about it. Like, so Dylan's Blowing in the Wind was, you know, raging. Tambourine Man was raging, and this sort of, you know, the words being as deep as the Sounds of Silence. You know, you can just keep thinking of the Sounds of Silence, but you can't really get to a point. But they sort of made it. So it's really fascinating, I would say. And yeah, so do you have anything to add before we jump into the practice?
Yeah, well, I just add a bit more context as well. You know, the album, when it was conceived, it was supposed to be, I think, 6 original songs and 6 cover songs. But then it ended up being, I think, 5 original songs, 3 sort of traditional folk songs, and then like 4 cover or like folk-inspired songs. So it's an interesting mix of like original as well as covers, or just recording folk songs in their own sort of, you know, way. Putting their own twist on it. So it's quite an interesting album from that perspective. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know which songs? So let's, when we
can go through it now, track by track. But also, just to mention, one of the earlier suggestions as well, when they were saying it's going to be 6 covers and 6 original songs, the times they are changing, that was decided very early on as well, that is one of the songs they would cover. And I think that the rest of it they decided as it went on. But yeah, let's dive into it track by track.
Yep. So firstly, like I would say that I've sort of categorized it into feelings and the meanings of the lyrics. Yeah. So I don't know, I might mix them up while I'm talking. Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
But let's start with "You Can Tell the World." And you know, I think that's a very good song for starting out duo to sort of also tell the world that they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that, you know, just like all the happiness that they really put into the song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this one is their version of like a gospel song that existed beforehand. But yeah, it's very high energy, and also like their harmonizing, you know, singing style. It really does fit like a gospel sort of song really well. But yeah, I mean, I made a point that, you know, I enjoy this song, but I've been listening to this song as like the first thing in the morning, and it really gets you up and going in the morning. You know, if you wake up and you play this track, it's so high energy, but it's not loud, but it's high energy. And
I have an early day tomorrow. I will
yeah, play this in the morning. Also, one thing, you know, I don't know if you noticed, but this is actually quite prevalent in a lot of their songs. That, you know, it starts at a specific tempo, but as the song goes on, the tempo also speeds up. And you don't really notice this unless you sort of play the song back immediately as it ends. You can tell that difference, that way the song was a bit faster when it ended. But they do speed up that tempo compared to, you know, the tempo they start with, which again gives it that sort of like live folk performance feeling, you know, the tempo sort of varies as they're singing and playing along. Like, it brings that folkness of their sound, that folk rock sound.
True. I mean, yeah, that does cover the music part of it. And yeah. I just think every time I heard it over and over, it was, I just felt, what a happy song. You know, yeah. every time it was just, what a happy song. It's like, trying to show someone, or at the time show the generals and admirals, that, you know, there is so much happiness, so there is that way out as well. Because this is the year of Vietnam War, and so I just think it's a good song that also follows into the next song, where it's about, you know, last night I had the strangest dream, which is just like a, you know, it's another Imagine, maybe.
Yeah. So John Lennon's Imagine. That's the vibes I got as well from the lyrics as well. This was originally written by Ed McCurdy, I think a year back or 2 years back.
Mm-hmm.
This song was also written during that era, you know, that Vietnam War. It was sort of very anti-war and you know, from the lyrics. But so McCurdy actually knew Simon and Garfunkel from beforehand. And I think that's how they ended up coming to that sort of agreement of like actually doing their own version of this song. But yeah, I know it's a really nice song. It does remind me of Imagine a little bit, the way, you know, it's sort of, there's that dream.
Last night I had this stranger's dream, and people were, you know, living peacefully, happily.
Yeah, they agreed to stop all the wars, yeah. And then the banjo in the background is so nice as well. It feels so unique, played by Simon. It really, you know, again, it takes the sound, you know, it takes the song, but it makes it unique in respect to the other songs in the album with that banjo.
True.
I think
that banjo was added, like I was talking about the nuances. That's one of the nuances that, you know, adding that banjo is the actual classical American folk rock.
It gives it that feeling, put it.
So, you know, it's quite It stands out, as you said, it stands out
Yeah.
of the entire list of tracks that we have, because all songs go in a different zone, while this one puts you in a historic sort of phase. But I think, yeah, we'll get to that. There is another song that we'll come to that. Yeah, let's move to the next track, which is Bleecker Street.
It covers
And
Bleecker Street,
it's
fills the
so do you know Bleecker Street is an actual
alleys
street in Greenwich Village, New York,
Yeah, New York, yeah.
named on the Bleecker's who owned a farm in the 1800s, I think.
Yeah, it's quite a history to
And
that.
so this song made that street so famous that, you know, they sing $30 pays your rent, which
Yeah.
also sort of gives you a glimpse into the economy at the time.
Yeah. So
And
interestingly, the $30 line. So I mean, this song itself, it's sort of a, I'd say almost like a melancholic but nostalgic ode to like New York City. But some of the writing in it, it's literal, but there's a lot of parallels and like symbolism going on. And specifically, the $30
$30
pays your
pays your
rent.
rent.
I remember reading somewhere that the one of the sort of, I can't remember if it was Simon or Garfunkel in one of the interviews, but they mentioned like Judas's a betrayal of Christ for like 30 pieces of silver. So there's a lot of like parallels and symbolism going throughout. Like I'm not smart enough to decipher all of them, but it's really a complex work of writing. And this is an original song written by Simon. It really has that complex writing style. It's there's a literal meaning, but there's symbolism throughout it.
And I think now that you're saying symbolism, I think
Yeah.
that's what also there are a few songs which have these, I would say, bars or sections which sort of place you right into the song visually. For
Yeah.
example, this one, it's like you find yourself on Baker Street because you know things about it.
Yeah.
You know, like a local would, you know things about it similarly. And when I did not have any background on it, so I thought $30 pays your rent could also mean for the, you know, refugee camps and stuff,
Yeah.
because
Yeah, I mean, I'm
that
sure
would
there's a
also
lot
make
of like
sense.
parallels packed in that, writing.
I mean, he did write on facts,
Yeah.
so that's a fact.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think then, so I've got this, Paul Simon, who wrote the song, has said that it is more representative of the New York folk sound of the times than of his particular talents. He says that while many lesser known songwriters had one or two standout songs, for the most part,
Yeah.
everybody of that period was writing the same thing on the same
Yeah,
theme,
yeah.
because I guess everyone wanted peace.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. So we then get to Sparrow. And I think this is somewhere where is this Simon's
Yeah, this is
writing?
also written by Simon. But for me, this is one of my favorite songs of the album, Sparrow. It's just so beautifully written, and also, performed.
True. I think this sort of introduces to what I read is Paul Simon's favorite theme, which is nature and you know, the circle of life. And yeah, so Sparrow sort of, you know, covers a lot of what Simon wanted to talk about or write about. Do you have any, you know, fun facts about
Well, I don't know facts, but just the song itself, like the content, I just feel it's because like Sparrow in the song is like the outsider who's like traveled far. But what I really like is, because the song kind of tells this story. Like, again, it's like, it's got the vibe of like a folk song telling a tale, like a folk tale. And then you got the oak tree and you got the swan and you got the golden wheat, and they all sort of give these different reasons. But it's just, I just found it so interesting that they do have different reasons, right? Like, the oak tree doesn't want to share. The swan is worried about how it's going to look like, or, you know, feeling embarrassed or people laughing at it. While the golden wheat is sort of claiming that, you know, it wants to help the swan, but it doesn't have the means to help the sparrow. So I just think, like, having those different reasons, and they feel, again, relatable, right? With the golden wheat, like, when it claims that it needs all its grains.
Yeah.
It's you know, in your life, whenever you've had a moment that you could help someone or someone asked for help, but you say no because you can always find an excuse to not help someone. You know, either you're too busy or, you know, you've got something else that's more higher priority. There's always a reason that you can very easily find not to help someone. And I feel like that's what the song sort of reflects that. And in the end, you know, the cherry on top is that in the end, the earth sort of declaring that everyone is equal. You know, from dust were ye made, and dust ye shall be. It's just, it brings it together so well, because, like, you have people worrying about status, you know, like the swan, and it's like, at the end of the day, we're all the same. So, you know, it just, the writing is, again, so beautifully done. I'm sure there's many more parallels that people have probably come up with. Maybe even, you know, symbolism and so forth. But just looking at it at face value itself is so rich that, yeah, I'm really captivated by the writing. All the songs that are written by Simon are amazing, in specifically in this album.
Yeah, I think, so I think in the last 30, 40 seconds, there's, you know, there's a guitar strum, and then I think it's talking about flapping its wings, the sparrow flapping its wings,
mm-hmm.
and there's dust that comes, like, they sing dust, and you know, the way the music goes, all of them added together, it, you know, you can sort of picture dust actually flying out. Like, there are these parts,
it creates, like, this experience
where they've sort of visualized it in a lyrical, musical, instrumental way. Quite well. There are more examples of that that will come along.
Yeah.
But there's that part that I really liked. Like, you know, when it's talking about the sparrow going, you know, going for a flight, and it flaps its wings, and there's dust flying out, and there's a guitar strum. I think, like, one
I'll
part.
I'll go back and listen to it carefully. Yeah.
I'll try
and notice that.
And as you said, I love that, you know, it's nature and cycle of life, and, you know, everything's going to be equal, because it's not we who decides equality. It is what it is. And, you know, what it is you will get back to dust. Now that we talk about dust, it's interesting that we, you know, I can connect that dust to the dust that the bird also flies with, because they sort of focus on that, or, you know, emphasize on that dust.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Then we have a blissful Benedictus. Yeah, I mean, I have written, like, what a blessing is Benedictus, because it is a blessing. It was, it's so calming, it's so soothing, and you know, studying in a Christian school and listening to the chapel choirs and everything, and it just reminded me of something. So I asked my brother, like, does this song remind you of a gospel or a hymn? That he did send me a reference. I don't have it written down, but then I did check. It's actually from, I think, an 18th or 19th century gospel or hymn.
So, so originally, so it's called I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's called a motet, which is sort of like a religious choral composition. And it was originally arranged by Orlando di Lasso. Again, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So yeah, there is a history to that, and it's interesting. You know, I'm sure, you know, Simon or Garfunkel or both of them, they had some sort of history with this song itself. You know, coming to how they actually came to choose this. But yeah, one thing I did, you know, you mentioned it being very peaceful as well, and I just love that sort of cello playing like the bass in the background. It just adds to that peacefulness, and again, it makes this song sort of stand apart from the other ones. That addition of the cello, it really gives it that bass. You know, it makes it really feel unique.
It's also you know, the way they break the word Benedictus, which is a blessing, which means a blessing, and you know, the in different what do we say? There's a music term. Tones, tunes, pitches. You know, like every segment is in a different pitch, and it's so harmonizing with their, obviously, with both of them singing together. It's also a good harmony, but you know, the way they break it up, and it makes sense because it's a good blessing. So Benedictus, which is a blessing, leads us to what I would say a blessing in music to us, which I mean, you know, people who know. Right. It's the Sounds of Silence, and it's amazing. I got to know the existence of the acoustic version back when I watched Watchmen, because they used the drums,
original version.
And I was just searching, and then I saw, okay, there's one Watchmen version, Watchmen OST, and then there's one this Wednesday 3 a.m. And I just was, I just listened to the Wednesday 3 a.m. and then that was it. In the beginning, it used to feel a lot blank because I was used to
listening.
I was used to the other one, and I was always wondering whether they remixed it or they didn't, or never got into it. But yeah, I'm happy to figure that out since whenever Watchmen released.
Well, this was for me, this was, I think, the first Simon and Garfunkel song I'd heard, but I had actually heard this before Watchmen. One of the teachers at the school recommended I listen to it, and so I went back, and I think it was the redubbed version I listened first. But I did find the original acoustic version shortly after that, and I mean, both of them I used to listen, I'd say, equally split, you know, depending on the mood. But that was my introduction to like Simon and Garfunkel's music, and I think for a lot of people that might have been the case.
Yeah, it was for me. It was this and Mrs. Robinson that were my first Mrs. Simon Robinson, and Garfunkel. I got introduced to I had already been listening to Sounds of Silence for Watchmen, but Watchmen sort of, you know, because the movie gave me goosebumps, and you know, it's a good movie. Just listening to the song sort of put me in the zone of the movie, and every time, so it was on repeat when Watchmen released, and that's when I started finding out that there's two versions. But now I find really out that there were two versions, but you know, and this version failed in front of the other one. But now that I hear it back to back, or heard this one for like a week now, and it feels more purer.
If, you know, it's very raw.
It's in its, you know, original Simon and Garfunkel sound, I would say. And with, I mean, it still holds, because I was discussing it with someone. It was never the music, like I told someone else this fact recently, you know, she had a she was listening to it, and she's like, no, this sounds very empty. So I felt okay. So I guess that's grown on me because I have attached myself to the words, to the lyrics, and you know what they're saying, what they're trying to say, and I can hear it in two different mindsets, I would say.
I mean, it is, you know, it is much less sort of your pop mainstream sounding, right? This original version. But again, it's just so beautifully written and so jam-packed with, you know, symbolism or parallels and meanings that I'm sure, you know, a lot of people can listen to it and find their own sort of interpretation of it. But just, you know, I think on the face of it, really, it's about people being unable to communicate, you know, just going on with their own lives, but there's not a lot of communication going on. But you know, you could say, you know, like a part of it sort of feels almost like it's about like awakening or like enlightenment, you know, when he sees like 10,000 other people who are stuck in that same silence that he was stuck in, where he's now privy to understanding that everyone is stuck in that. But
It's,
yeah, I mean,
I think it's.
each verse itself has like so many meanings that you can get into.
I mean, it's an inception of an idea which you can't hold on to. I don't know if that's making sense. It's, you know, that you get to know of an idea that there's a sound of silence as well, or, you know, that there's a meaning to the sound of silence, but you can't really place your finger on it because it's the sound of silence. So there's like a, I mean, it's an oxymoron, I would say, I
It's
guess.
elusive, yeah.
So, I mean, it's that it's very philosophical. It's I mean, it's always been mind boggling for me. It's been a crazy ride listening to Sound of Silence. Every time, you know, I wanted to sort of chill and be in my zone, and or maybe go to a zone. This is the song that I always reached out to.
It's interesting you say that. Yeah, I mean, even for me, this is kind of like a, it's weird. It's kind of like a comfort song. Like if you're not feeling well for, or you know, it's not like the song itself is like depressing or very melancholic, even though it is, you know, slower and more like the themes are, I'd say, are darker themes. But I, for some reason, it feels comforting and reassuring just listening to that song. You know, however bad of a mood you might be in or whatever's happening, it just feels reassuring. And you know, you like I said, every time you listen to it or depending what mood you're in, you get, you know, different insights. Like, you know, the line where, you know, the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls and tenement halls. And of course, you know, lots of people like interpret it in different ways. But the way I see it, at least this past week when I've been re-listening to it, is again, the song feels like it's about people being unable to communicate. And it again feels like, you know, like graffitis, like the truth is out there on the walls of subway. Of you know the graffitis and all the stuff where people have written messages or they've written some sort of truth, but it gets ignored. But we don't say that stuff. That's usually written in graffiti. That's the real truth out there. You know, people are don't communicate like that. So it just feels very much about that type of, you know, everyone being sort of stuck in their own lives but not really opening up their perspective to understanding other people. We're all trapped in the sounds of silence, essentially.
So every time you hear the song, it's a lot like, you know, there's a, as you said, a newer meaning that you were finding. And at the time that it was released, I think it might have been a little difficult for people to accept that there could be, you know, prophets who write on the subway walls.
Words of the prophets are
I
written
mean,
on
I'm
the
just
still, that would be difficult for
subway
people to accept.
walls. Okay.
But it was very deep. Yeah, it was a very deep song, and I think it kind of flew under the radar a little bit, or maybe it didn't reach the right people who would have appreciated it initially. But I mean, there was a reason, right, that why it did start showing up on the radio plays, and then, you know, the producer decided to like redub it and also rename it to, you know, removing the S from sounds. But yeah, I think initially it did fly under the radar, like the rest of the album. I think it just didn't get the right exposure it needed to reach the amount of people to really appreciate what the song is and what a lot of the songs are on the track, on this album.
True. Yeah, but Sounds of Silence is, it will always be a musical gem, you know? Like, it'll always be something that I would, you know, listening to any other songs or being in any other zone, this is a zone that I know that I would want to get into sometime, and that would be on repeat.
And you know, through this song at least, you know, I think Simon and Garfunkel's voices are embedded in the zeitgeist, you know. This, specifically this song, I think, is just so iconic, you know, in a sense. You know, it turned into, you know, Watchmen used it, and then a lot of movies have used it, and it sort of turned into a meme for a little bit, you know. Arrested Development did a few bits on it, and then, you know, it got picked up by the pop culture. It sort of resurfaced again, so it's in the zeitgeist twice. You know, originally as the Sound of Silence, the song, but now this other whole joke that people sort of, you know, like a meme, you know, it's been used. It's sort of really been embedded twice. You know, once by the internet now, so it's
you know, just Ben Affleck.
Hello darkness, my old friend.
So Sounds of Silence. Sounds of Silence, to get back on it, Sounds of Silence is the original name, The Sound of Silence, and then it was redubbed and re-released, which was then called The Sound of Silence. And yeah, so that then moves us to the next track, which is He Was My Brother. And it's a track of loss, you know. They're just singing of loss of something, losing something closest to anyone. And here they're denoting brother. It could be, you know, any member of the family, because those are the ones who closest to you. I would say brother. I mean, you know, having an experience in that, I would agree with it, because you sort of, there's this unknowing bond that will always remain with a brother, and the loss of a brother would really, really be hard on anyone. And you know, I think it's just about the martyrs who lost their lives fighting for the right cause. And you know, they were fighting to not fight, if that makes sense, right?
Freedom and riders. Yeah.
So I think they also mentioned sing that, but that something similar to that. And there's this nuance where, you know, they sort of pull the, or like take aim while they're singing they, and then they, you know, pull the trigger when they're like, shut my brother dead. So
there's that pause.
So that's you know, that felt hard, like a gunfire, like an actual gun. Like,
yeah,
you know, they sort of,
even though it's just singing,
they're just singing it, and that pulling that, they, you know, stretching it and then pausing and the gunfire, and you know, that this I think the first few times it actually gave me goosebumps, and every time that was the part that stood out every time, and it was
you
got a visual feeling of what they were saying through their instruments, lyrics and stuff.
And you know, this one again is an original song written by Simon, and you know, they dedicated this song to Andrew Goodman, who was sort of a friend and classmate of theirs, and a civil rights activist. And he died in 1964. He was abducted and killed. It was part of like a lot of like murders of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner, I think it's pronounced, I'm not sure. But you know, interestingly, so the song was actually written before this incident, and it goes back to, you know, it was written in a more general term about, like you mentioned, all the sort of martyrs and people mm-hmm. fighting for the cause to not fight, in a sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was written in that sense, but then that incident happened and the song was released after the incident, so it was kind of dedicated to him afterwards. And interestingly, they re-released this song later on and they actually changed some of the lyrics to actually apply to this particular incident. So, you know, instead of singing "this town," they say "Mississippi" is one example. But they switched out some of the words for it to actually be dedicated to Andrew Goodman. But it was written originally as a more sort of general song about all the sort of brothers fighting, even in a sense, you know, so that their brothers could be free.
Yeah, at the time, you know, in the Vietnam War and everything, it was, you know, I think once you turned 18 or 17, you had to join the army mm-hmm. and
get drafted. Yeah.
Yeah, it would make sense. And again, these guys are just talking about peace. They're just talking about, you know, letting peace happen.
Yeah,
so then we've got the next track, which is Peggy O, or Peggy O. It's a, you know, it's the, I will just first leave you with the first impression that I got was, it's for the prettiest girl alive.
So I mean, this song is actually based off a Scottish folk song.
Okay.
So it's again one of those, like, they've taken a folk song and they've put their own sort of spin to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's sort of, you know, this, I guess the literal story is the captain of a troop sort of falling in love with Peggy O, who is, like you said, the most beautiful girl. And sort of, you know, he's sort of daydreaming that, you know, they're going to run away together.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But then, you know, the last verse, it kind of jumps to, you know, if I ever return, all your cities I will burn. So clearly someone is like heartbroken. It didn't go in the way they thought it would.
Yeah.
But the song does jump to it. So the first time I was listening to it, I was like, did I miss a verse in there? Like, there was this sudden, you know, shift in tone. And then when I listened again, I was like, okay. So I guess things didn't go quite the way the captain thought it would go. And so, you know, that's this sort of warning.
True.
But it's interesting how they chose that, you know, like a random sort of Scottish folk song ends up on this album.
And it's, you know, it genuinely feels like a very good love song. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a very genuine, heartfelt songwriting, I would say.
Yeah.
For the prettiest girl alive. And I've mentioned, like, I've noted this one point down, which is that I appreciate them a lot for using, you know, that she was brushing her yellow hair instead of like a blonde hair.
So I'd imagine that comes from the original folk song. But I haven't actually heard the original version, so I don't know what changes they might have made. But some of the words and some of the sort of lyrics or whatever the chosen words are, I'd imagine they are inspired or they come from that original Peggy O folk song, the Scottish folk song.
It was, I mean, as a fan of lyrics, it was just very interesting to see, you know, yellow hair being used somewhere instead of the general, you know, maybe soft hair, silky hair, and blonde hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, there's a list that goes on that's been used and reused, but I think this is the first time I heard yellow hair. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the next track, which is Go Tell It on the Mountains. And it's literally just, you know, going on the mountain and just singing along. It's like I just got this vision of the Pied Piper with the, you know, the hype and singing, and
Yeah.
he's just sort of like people are just following him,
Shouting.
and you know, go tell them.
Nice.
So
Yeah.
that goes very
Yeah,
well.
so this is again based off another like existing like spiritual song. But I was looking at it, so apparently the original is actually considered a Christmas carol as well. So I'd imagine it was, one of the more famous songs that they would have heard perhaps, or carols, and they sort of turned it into they put their own spin on it. But yeah, this is like the third, I would say, like explicitly religious song on the album, right?
Yeah, and
You had like Benedictus, and then You Can Tell the World, and then this one.
so without knowing the history, the what my first feeling was that maybe it's related to Jesus and Moses or something, because
Yeah.
going on the mountains in a and talking about these peaceful things, these positive
Yeah.
things, and
Yeah.
blessing people, just sort of spreading or showering blessings
Yeah.
everywhere.
Well, you were right, yeah.
And
Yeah. That is sort of what the song is.
so that and then the next we've got is The Sun Is Burning,
The
and it's
sun
a
is burning
this
in the
sunshine,
sky.
sunny day song, and on a summer day, how perfectly things can happen. But also, I mean, I've been confused. Maybe you can guide
Yeah.
me. But
Yeah.
what if sun is like the light which you see out of an explosion?
That's what it is. So, I mean, it's another sort of anti-war type song.
It
But this
is,
is
yeah.
actually originally written by a British folk performer, Ian Campbell, in 63. So it was like a year before they released it. But yeah, I mean, at the end, it is like the sun, the mushroom cloud that they mention, like nuclear explosion, nuclear war. But it's interesting because I think you can draw different parallels. So like I think the more obvious way that you could see it is that like the sun, the sun represents nuclear weapons, and that you think they'll keep you safe, like the people in the park, and the sun is bringing the warmth. Because at the time as well, nuclear weapons were shown as like this is a deterrent, this is a way for us to be safe, and right before the whole Cold War. So this is kind of saying that, oh yeah, it's people are playing in the park and it's all nice, and then eventually, as the verses go, the sun comes down and everyone dies. And I think the other way that I sort of see it as well, is sun, you could take sun to be the passing of time, like the sun kind of going down. And basically what they're saying is the fact that these nuclear weapons exist is just a matter of time that someone gets trigger happy
And
and
your
causes
windows and doors
devastation.
will shake.
So it's just a passing, this, yeah. So it's you could take the sun to be the passing of time, instead of an actual nuclear weapon. But in the end, the nuclear weapon does go off, and you got the mushroom cloud of death. All is darkness, anger, pain, and fear. The sun has disappeared.
And the
So.
way they perfectly describe this this sort of ideal law of the optimal a society can be in
Yeah.
terms of happiness, that there's the
Yeah.
sun going down, there's
But
children playing, and the
yeah.
sun is going
They
down now, so
create
it's
this
time to
beautiful
go back home.
scenery.
And yeah, exactly, it's
Yeah.
a scenery.
Yeah. And then suddenly you get that twist of the mushroom cloud of death. So it kind of wakes you up a little bit.
So I mean, it's a again it's so this you said is a song by Campbell.
A British folk performer, yeah, Ian Campbell. But yeah, it's yeah, I think this song and Sparrow were two songs that I went back and listened to quite a lot, trying to like, because I mean, the message is there, but I think it's just so beautifully put, and the way they also sing in that like sweet voice, and then you have something dark happening like in this one. I think it just really, it's quite captivating. So I found myself coming back to this song quite a lot.
The second last song, which is The Times Are Changing, and you know, it's a way of saying that, you know, the next generation or the generation to come is going to act differently, or maybe it's to inspire the next generation to not listen to their elders who have been only instigating war in people and in the world.
What about people being stuck in their own times, you know, like this is how we do things.
Yeah.
And then oftentimes, you know, you don't get innovation then, or you don't get improvement of any kind in society. But yeah, I mean, I'd say this is one of those, like, because I haven't heard, you know, all the other covers, I haven't really heard the originals, but this one I have heard, you know, the Bob Dylan version. And I think, you know, this version is actually quite similar to the Bob Dylan version. I think the main addition really are the harmonies, and then, like, you know, the lack of the mouth organ, I think it was, that the Bob Dylan version had. But I was surprised by how similar it is to the original one. Obviously, with slightly their twist of, you know, how they harmonize and vocalize. But, you know, what you were saying, the themes are very evergreen that this song has. And I'm sure, you know, one day when we'll do Bob Dylan, we can dive really deep into it as well, about how it came about and everything. But yeah, what you were saying, you know, times are always changing and people are always resisting change. And I think that's really,
I think this is
what this song is about.
It's also like it carries a hope.
Yeah.
Right? It's got this hope in it that there will be better times, there will be better reforms or reformations. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it captures the generation gap maybe quite essentially.
Yeah.
And at quite an early age for the kind of songwriting.
Yeah.
Along with, obviously, we will get into Bob Dylan when we get into Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we now have the last song, which is the album Wednesday Morning 3 a.m. Do you want to start this?
Yeah, so this is, again, an original song written by Simon. And, you know, really, this song, it's kind of just about, I'd say, like, regret and like, consequences of a decision you've made. You know, like, the main character in the song is not looking forward to tomorrow morning. You know, he knows he has to leave his loved ones. You know, he did something bad. He did something wrong. So, I mean, that the face value of the song is, it's about a character who, you know, robbed a liquor store, and now tomorrow he has to run away, leaving his life behind. But the writing, again, is so well done. Like, I've written down this part, you know, my life seems unreal, my crime and illusion a scene badly written in which I must play. And it's just so poetically written. And it really reminds you of, you know, like, All the World's a Stage line by Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But like a scene badly written in which I must play. And you know, sometimes you do get in certain situations in life where things spun out of control and you're trying to identify where did it all go wrong almost, you know. What led me down this path to do this? And I think the song sort of plays on that a little bit. Wednesday morning, 3 a.m., you know, when you can't sleep, you're up at 3 a.m.
In the middle of the week.
Just like, exactly. And your brain is just like, I did something really bad. Are you feeling that regret or that guilt? Or you're scared of the consequences and you're trying to question yourself, like, how did I get here in a way? Or like, how, you know, things just, it seems unreal sometimes when you're going through that. And I think that's what this song really captures, apart from just what it has on face value.
True. And it's, you know, it's a good song to end with as well. Sort of taking all the songs, combining them all together, and maybe just sort of work.
The album, like, starts very happy and positive, but it kind of ends on a bit more sort of a melancholic note of, like, regret and consequences, which is quite interesting.
It sort of, you know, but it ends with regrets and consequences, so which is fine for the album that we are going for, because that's how you get, you know, or be regretful, because You did something and you were happy doing that, and well, you've got a lot more shit being thrown at you. And yeah, it's
Exactly.
just, and again, it's good to end it with, the album, the name of the album, so it covers the essence of it. And you sort of get reminded again, okay, this can happen, or this is a thought process that could happen to anyone, something
Yeah,
like
and I
that.
mean, like, if you think about the songs in general, right? Like, especially the ones that were sort of written by Simon, like Bleecker Street, Sparrow, The Sound of Silence, all of these songs, they really fit that theme of Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. because they're all very like existential in a way, and there are things that, again, when you're not able to go to sleep and it's 3 a.m., though, these are the sort of things you're sometimes thinking about, right? So it really does fit in with that theme of Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. Like, that's the best time to listen to this album in a sense, especially the originally written songs by Simon. They really feel like, that it's that type of like existential thinking going on, which is maybe why they named the album as they did,
Maybe he just wrote all these songs actually at 3 a.m. Never know. I mean, he could have, or maybe he just started like week to week, and Wednesday to Wednesday,
Well, I know for
Wednesday.
some of the songs, I mean, now that we're sort of in the more sort of summary section of our discussion, I know that there's, for example, with The Sound of Silence, there's a lot of disagreement over when it was written, because I think Simon told one story and then Garfunkel told some other story, and so there's not a general consensus of when that song was actually written by Simon, which I thought was quite interesting, the different people having the different stories of how the song's written.
Share the story.
Well, Si I think Simon said something along the lines that he wrote it when he was quite young in like the shower. He used to like singing in the bathroom because of the, tiling, the echo effect you get, like an echo chamber. And I think he just got his guitar or something in the bathroom and he just wrote it when he was like really young. And I think the interviewer even asked Simon, but how does like, I can't remember if it was 22 or 23, but the interviewer was like, how does a 22-year-old say these words that are there in The Sound of Silence? And he said, I don't know, they just came to me. But when they asked Garfunkel, he was like, no, it was just written in 1963 or something like that, or 1964. He was like, no, we just wrote it over 2 nights and I don't know what that's about. So it's interesting that they have those different stories. And it could be that, because I just read, I don't know the context of the interview or if there's like an actual audio video recording. Maybe they were being playful. Or maybe there is some, ambiguity in how it was written. But yeah, it's in, but I would say again, The Sound of Silence is probably the highlight of this album. It's really what I think launched them into the mainstream, especially the redub version that came later on. But even this original version, I think it's,
This original version
the
is
highlight.
like, so if you say Sound of Silence, the Sound of Silence is something that sort of captures a lot of emotions, and in a sort of more trendy way. So this is just like a more purer form of energy, which
It's like when, artists release like the demo version of the song, or
and
so that's what this version feel. If you say The Sound of Silence that came later, the redub version was like the actual released version. This version kind of feels like the demo version before that one was released, without the drums and without all the, electric instruments and stuff. It's got that feeling to it, that raw feeling.
And I mean, it never felt bad listening, or felt, as people mentioned,
Lacking,
empty, or there's something missing over here. Because if you originally, well, maybe, I don't know if Simon Garfunkel would have gotten their fame if they hadn't gotten Sound of Silence released.
I
Because
mean, that's really what pushed, their producer doing that was really what pushed them, I think, to the mainstream. But
because
also just pulling focus back a little, I think just the album in general, I think it's just very interesting. I mean, you've got the Sounds of Silence, but just the themes around, like, you've got war, protest, death, change, and it's just even The Sounds of Silence, it's about like I said, it's about people being unable to communicate, but that's one of the main reasons for, you know, you could argue for war even.
Yeah.
Like two sides not being able to communicate properly or come to an agreement.
Yeah.
That just results in violence. So the way they picked the songs and the way they covered the songs, it's very interesting. But a lot of these themes are very evergreen, you know.
True. And, you know, even though times are changing, it's like these. So there are parts. There's one song which was. You know, there are songs which felt so authentic folk music that it reminded me of this the Renaissance period in like in the Italian thing, and I think it was Assassin's Creed 2. Have you played Assassin's Creed 2?
Briefly, but I haven't played
so
all that, the way through.
So you can, you know, when you're in the open world,
I played
you can
the first
walk
one
around
all the way through. Yeah.
And
yeah.
There are these people with the banjo.
Imbecile.
That's in one.
Right.
So in the second
one is imbecile. Look at that guy. What is he doing? Something like that, right?
In this, like, yeah. There are people who want, like, who want you to throw money at them. They're street performers. So they'll just come in front of you and they'll start playing the banjo.
I see.
And that sort of,
yeah.
I mean, if that's historically
that music, that sound
correct,
yeah,
then it does sound a lot like Simon Garfunkel, or taken from Simon Garfunkel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's the folk type. That's the folk in the folk rock, if you will, in Simon and Garfunkel as well, right? Like the music that even they've been inspired from come from those folk tales that may not necessarily originated in the U.S. all the time, right?
Yeah.
They might have a deeper history. I think it's interesting, but very unique. I think this album, it was a commercial failure. But it still is a very good introduction to Simon and Garfunkel's music and their sort of style. And, you know, the songs they picked to cover and the gospels and everything, it really, you know, it fits their harmonizing vocal style so well. And they really deliver on that. And every song, again, like I said, it's still kind of unique. You know, it doesn't blend together as the same type of song. So it's very interestingly arranged.
Yeah, true. And I also, this sort of set a sort of theme to that era for me. I mean, mm-hmm. I did note, you know, tidbits from here and there. And so because the Doors also formed during this period. And so I got into that, and there's Floyd and, you know, people... There are musicians talking about the same thing, but this sort of, you know, defined it as I mentioned in one of the songs, like a local's perspective on what's happening and what they would want to happen, what they would not want to happen, and you know, and incidents like they shot my brother dead. So, you know, those attachments that were there at the time is what I could really understand and empathize with over here.
Yeah.
So this, I guess, that covers the first album by Tom and Jerry.
The dynamic duo, Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah.
And it's a great album, it's a great listen, and it's a great read if anyone's interested. Yeah. And so that covers it. So we will see you with something completely new, hopefully. Or maybe just something that we would just love to listen to. And if you've got any suggestions of what we should listen to, please do comment. And yeah, do you have any closing thoughts?
No, I think we covered it. You know, you covered it quite well. I'm ready for jumping into the next album for our video next week.
See you next week. I will mention my favorites after we're done with the last one,
yeah,
which is The Times Are Changing.
Well, there's one more after that, but yeah, second last one.
Hello darkness, my old friend.
Is there one more after that?
Wednesday morning, 3 a.m. The main song.
I don't have that written down. I think it's also, it has this, you know, I zoned out.
Parents.
It just crashed.
15 pe ho na, beta. Chalo, at least the Zoom recording is there.
Zoom recording is there. Haan, ho to jata hai. So
do you want to redo that?
Yeah.
Part. Second last song.